Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome you to Tel Aviv's 10th event, which is also our one-year anniversary. So I see many familiar faces. I also see a lot of new faces. I want to welcome you. Also, I want to mention that Alon Tal spoke at our first event, and now this is our 10th event. And I want to just give people here some background about Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv started in a bar, and it was with friends talking about their environmental jobs, their interest in the environment, because their roommates, their friends didn't really care, like a support group. And then we really evolved to what we have here, which is a really strong community. We have a Facebook group with over 600 people, and we continue to grow. And we have a really great event today. Before giving it to Shirley, I just want to mention that we have some amazing tote bags for sale. There it is, and it's
compliance,
great for the...
Compliance can be sexy.
Yeah, great for the new bag tax and some delicious cookies. And here's Shirley.
I just want to say also that the idea really at Tel Aviv is once a month we have environmental talks in English on different topics related to environment and sustainability. So this is our 10th event. It's very, very exciting to have these speakers here today and to kind of start off, kick off 2017. I want to thank again the Iria for hosting us. I know Jill's not here, but she's really helping us out. So I want to thank the Iria for generously hosting us, as well as the moderators and speakers who will soon introduce, as well as the team behind Tel Aviv. There's a bunch of people here sitting in this room that are really working and volunteering their time. So I just want to thank, I'm not going to go into each name, but really thanks to everyone here. And let's kick this off. I want to introduce the moderator of the event, Maya Crabtree, to my right. She's the director. Yeah, she's the director of Environment and Sustainability at Forum 15, and is the former deputy director of Life and Environment, the umbrella environmental NGO here in Israel. She'll introduce the panel speakers, but I just want to give a little bit of an overview. We'll have a moderate discussion here, moderated by, of course, Maya, with different discussion questions that we kind of thought as a team. And then the second session will be devoted to just Q&A from you, the audience, your questions. You all come from different sectors. We'd love to hear who you are, what you're interested in, and have you ask the questions. So Maya, this is yours.
Thank you, Julie, so much. And thank you, Tel Aviv, for having me here today. I only heard of Tel Aviv last month when Shirley introduced it to me, and I was actually shocked to realize I hadn't heard of it before, because it's an amazing initiative, and this was just going on under my nose in Tel Aviv as a resident of the city these days. I would be happy and would have been happy to be part of this group even earlier, so I'm really glad that you invited me, and if that's okay, I would love to join you in future events, and kol hakavod to the initiators for this event. So I'm really glad to be paneling this this panel today, chairing this panel today, because with me are amazing people from the environmental movement with whom I've had the chance to work over the years. I'm really happy to meet you all at the same table today and sit with you at this table. What we're going to discuss today are the main challenges that the environment in Israel faces today, how Israel is dealing with them, and perhaps how Israel should be dealing with them from different perspectives. We have the perspectives of NGOs, political parties, and academia. We have the perspective of people who work in governments and in NGOs, and we've got the business perspective. And so we'll try to mix all these perspectives in the discussion today. I've been asked to say a word about what Forum 15 is. This really cannot be completed in a short time, so I'll just say one thing, and I'll be available for questions afterwards if you're interested. Forum 15 is the coalition of the 15 independent cities in Israel, cities that do not receive support, for state support, as the other cities receive because of the independent budgets. It's more difficult to explain than that. Basically, it's the 15 largest cities in Israel, minus Jerusalem, etc. I direct the field of environment and sustainability, and Forum 15 has been involved in this field since 2008. It exists since 2000. Since 2008, we have what we call our climate convention, whereupon the 15 largest cities of Israel actually committed for the first time, before the state of Israel did so, to reducing greenhouse gas emissions from the territories. This was a very significant step forward, because for the first time, cities not only took responsibility for what's happening in their own, like we call the blue line, in their own field, but they also took responsibility for what happens outside. We, for example, take responsibility in Tel Aviv to reduce the pollution that is emitted in Ashkelon, in Haifa, etc. And this led us to significant environmental activity on which I will not continue to talk right now because we want to get to our discussion. So I'm really excited to introduce our panelists for this evening. We have to my right, so this is just order of sitting order, no special order of importance. We have Mr. Yossi or Yosef Abramovich. Yosef leads Energia Global, did I pronounce this correctly? And he is a prominent environmental activist, and many of you have probably heard of him in the media. We have next to Yossi sitting advocate Alona Sheffer-Caro. She now represents Energix, but she's most prominently known as the former Director General of the Israeli Ministry for Environmental Protection, and also my previous boss. And in Life and Environment, she was the Director General of Life and Environment until 2009, I believe I'm correct. And we've got, of course, Professor Alon Tal. He represents Tel Aviv University. He's also one of the founders of the Israel Green Movement Party. That's the way we say it. And he represents also one of the founders of the Arava Institute, and he's also a former chair of Life and Environment, where I used to work as well. So everyone's actually connected to each other. And without further ado, I'd like to start Davka, there's no word in Hebrew for Davka, with a personal question. So I want to start with Yossi and Alon and ask you, and also Alona, how you guys made it to this field. It doesn't go without saying to get to this field, especially maybe now these days people are more aware, but to start in this field 20 years ago is a significant decision. So I'd like to ask first Yossi how you reached this field and actually persisted in it.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and anything we can do to strengthen your hand, you guys give us energy, and so and we know it's renewable, so that's why we're all here. I was a kid during the Arab oil boycott. I had been in Israel, and then we were bussed, and I remember the gas lines below my window on the corner of Harvard Street and the Thaler in Brookline, and thinking, how is it that there's a war happening against Israel, and somehow it's affecting here? There has to be another way. And then Jimmy Carter was elected 2-3 years later, and one of the first things he did, Stu Eisenstadt and his policy advisor, said, hey, why don't we put some solar panels on the White House? And I was like, wait, you can get energy from the sun? Like, I was a kid. And I recently found, I started drawing, like, you know, electric cars powered by solar panels and started playing with it and kind of had a fascination. My whole life I've been a political and social activist, not necessarily a business person. And we're used to getting things done, and mostly human rights activists, mostly for Jewish causes. Alon and I have a lot of the same DNA in terms of the youth movement. We come from a Young Judea Zionist youth movement. Some of you are connected to it. And Eva Tanish and Taolam, exactly. So we drank the Kool-Aid early, and luckily, Alon made Aliyah before I did, and set up the Arava Institute at Kibbutz Keturah before I got there. So by the time our family, my daughter Halal's here, by the time Susan and I and the five kids showed up at Kibbutz Keturah, there was already an Arava Institute, and there were already Palestinian, Jordanian, Israeli, American, other students there. And we got there on August 24th, 2006, get out of the air-conditioned van as the sun is setting. We open the doors and are hit with that heat that is just so unbelievable. And this, even though the sun is almost down, it's burning us like the Superman laser beams. You know, seven people from Newton, Massachusetts just walk into the third most extreme desert in the world in the summer. And I just said to myself, I'm sure the whole place works on solar power. It actually, I would love to say there's a strategic plan that, it comes from because I took, courses or I had mentors or any of that. It was just, 150 degrees out, whatever it was. And when the first day we were there, I asked, and they said, no, there's no solar power at Kibbutz Keturah. I was like, that's impossible. The Arava Institute is here. And they're like, no, it's not Kedai. But the second day, I was like, well, it must be in the region. I'm like, no, nothing going on in the region. I was like, well, isn't Israel like one of the world leaders on this in the area? No one's crazy enough to take on the Israeli government. And I was like, I'll do it. And really having the base of the Yarov Institute was very helpful, and we were able to do a test site, and it's a longer story, the rest is history. But what I do want to say, because Alona is here, that the Israeli government, even today, is still a complete basket case, and it's a scandal where we are, certainly on the renewables front and the greenhouse gas emissions. But there were always great people. You just have to find the point of light in each Mishrad. And you were one of them in my journey. Okay.
Alona, same question.
Me? Alona?
I'll
be shorter than Yossi. Well, actually, I was a young lawyer. I was 30 years old, and I was totally bored with my job at a private firm, asking myself, what the hell am I doing here? And, looking for, I think, adventures. And one day, I read the newspaper, and I read that there is a big trial about Yitzhak Tshuva, that was building huge hotels on the seashore. And I said, and I read that there is a group, Adam Teva Vedin, crazy people who is suing them. I didn't know then that Alon was the founder of Adam Teva Vedin. And I said, this is what I want to do. I want to file charges against these people that are taking our resources. And I left the private law firm. My parents were devastated. I mean, a lawyer in a good private law firm, what is a chutzpah? What exactly are you doing? You are ruining your future. What? Why did we pay for a very good and so on? But I left the firm and worked 6 years in Adam Teva Vadim, and then 5 years leading Chaim V'Sviva. And then I met this young parliament member, Gilad Erdan, and he was asking me questions about environment. And I told him, you are going to be the next Ministry of Environment. And when you will be the minister, I'm going to be with you. Don't think that I'm a Likud member or supporter, and he knew that. You cannot come from the environmental NGOs and to be suspected to be a... although he asked me to come and give lectures to Chavre Merkaz about environmental issues, and I came. And then he was elected to be the Minister of Environmental Defense. And soon enough, I called him and I said, okay, so when do I come? And he said, where? I said, I told you that when you are going to be the minister, I'm coming. He said, okay, come Sunday. So I came Sunday, and after a year and a half that I was his professional consultant, he decided to
promote
me. Mm-hmm. And I was the general director of the ministry for 2.5 years, and the rest is history.
I refer to myself usually as a second-generation environmentalist. My father, when I was growing up, was the chemist who ran the analytical laboratories for EPA for the East Coast of the United States. So a typical dinner conversation would be something like this. There's 700% greater incidence of bladder cancer in New Orleans than the rest of America. We know it's from the water in the Mississippi River. I just got 300 water samples, and they expect me to find the carcinogenic substances. So I didn't really have a choice when you get raised at that kind of a table. But the truth of the matter was that coming to Israel and being an environmentalist, or environmentalism and Zionism, to me are very much interrelated. First of all, I think one of the things that really was compelling to me when I came to Israel when I was 17 on your course for Young Judea was the fact that I really felt back then, and even though today, that Israel was not as ossified a society as other places. In other words, it was still a place where you could come in and change things. You could hang up a shingle and do something, and people were actually going to let you do it. And that was sort of a can-do spirit that existed, you know, with the founding fathers who created a state against all odds, and it kind of still exists today, and I think even more so today than ever before, because with often dysfunctional governments, it's really civil society who's doing the heavy lifting. The other thing was that I really was and remain a Zionist, and when you distill the Zionist idea down to its essence, I've always felt that it was sort of the Jewish people's impulse to seize their identity as indigenous people. After 2,000 years of diasporas in Europe, and African countries, Asian countries, wherever, we decided we want to come back and be like other indigenous people. And, you know, when you look at how indigenous people feel towards where they live, that sense of place, that was the goal, to create a real connection. So in coming back to Israel, I'm trying to think, well, what, you know, unique contribution can I make? Because, by the way, first of all, you guys are remarkable, but you have to understand how few Americans have ever moved to Israel and how amazing the contribution historically of Americans have been, starting with Agronaut, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, who brought in so many innovations, also a young Judean, by the way. But really, it was a sense that this was the environmental movement in Israel, which was really in its infancy when I started working, was the untapped potential of this Zionist core idea of coming back to the land of Israel, letting the Bible be our roadmap, and doing something to be a blessing on this place. So that's what it was about.
Oh, hold on, that was an amazing ending, and I'm going to refer to the issue of ideology and environment later in our panel. But now I'd like to address the main question, start with the main question of the panel. And this is a big question, so you can take your time to answer, and I'd like you to answer using what, who, and how. And the question is, in your opinion, what are the main environmental challenges facing Israel these days, and what should Israel do about them? And of course, you don't have to take time to talk about all of them, but maybe focus on the main challenge that you think we can, you know, is solvable or creates a big potential for Israel. So maybe let's start now with Alon, go all the way back. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Here's a book. Where's your book?
That's an easy one, and in fact, I paid Maya to do that. So, look, everybody, I'm going to tell you something that we don't like to talk about so much in Israel, but it's true. There are already too many people in Israel, and the population is going to double. And I don't know of any environmental problem which doesn't go back to that rapidly growing population. In other words, when we do everything we can, and we have to keep doing in this room to make Israel a healthier place with cleaner air, but at the end of the day, we are dealing with symptoms rather than the cause. And so we will never stabilize greenhouse gases, we will never be able to have proper biodiversity protection or any of that stuff, unless we think about the issue of demography, something that was impossible to do in the past because we were still replacing the 6 million Jews, and that was sort of a solemn responsibility to our generation, and because there was some sort of a demographic war with the Arabs. But those two things don't exist anymore because we pretty much replaced the 6 million Jews. It's an amazing thing. And the Arabs, Israeli citizens, have been stable at 40,000 births a year for the last 20 years. So now we can finally talk about this issue. And to wrap this up in the great spirit of shameless Israeli self-promotion, there's a book here, The Land is Full.
Right.
You can get discounted with an author's signature tonight if you want, and know all about this, and even more so if you have insomnia, it's the perfect cure. So I'll pass it on a little bit. Really, we're going to be talking about the environment, we should, but at the end of the day, if we don't start thinking about population, we won't be anywhere else in another 20 years.
Well, you have to answer. I will ask you. Who has to take care of it? What should we do? It's the more difficult question.
Oh, well, that's an easy question, but do you want now?
Yeah. What do we do about this problem?
We have less kids.
No.
There once was a time, it's important this group to say about Aliyah. There was about 40 years when Aliyah was the major engine of demographic growth. 3.7 million Jews moved to Israel, including everybody in this room. But over the last 10, 15 years, the numbers have stayed at about 20 to 24,000. And the thing is, about 20, 22,000 people leave Israel every year, go to Silicon Valley. There's 66,000 Israelis. They're not cab drivers. They're great people. And that's good. We're at a balance. We don't have to change the law of return. What we need to do is stop incentivizing large families. At two kids, we need to stop giving people money to do something which is not in the public good. And again, finally, there's three ways to stabilize population, I always say, and that's empower women. The rest is coming.
First of all, I totally disagree with you. I think that one of the causes that Israel is growing economically and as a whole, the level of life and quality is rising. It's because now we finally at the amount of people that things are economically viable. So The country is growing economically. We are not like in Europe. And I had many, many meetings with people from Europe, ministers and general directors that are in a negative demographic growth. It's they lack young people. They lack they become old. It's they don't have enough growth. And it's good for Israel that, I know it sounds like not environmental, but if you have a good planning and you think about the future, those people are a potential for Israel for economical growth, and I don't see that as it's a problem. It's a manageable problem. The problem is that we don't manage it good. But I don't see it as the main problem of Israel. I see it as one of the potentials of Israel for economical growth. And the reason that Israel can afford herself now renewables is because by numbers it become more and more cheaper, and all those issues are why we can afford ourselves now subways, because we have enough people, because until now it wasn't economically viable. So, but I think that the biggest problem of the environment is the social
uprising.
Yeah. Because what have happened in Israel is that from the minute that the people have started to speak about the cost and the problem of cost of life, the government and especially the now the Ministry of Treasury, everything is now measured by, is it cheaper? Is it cheap? Is it cheaper? Environment is not cheap. It's always cheaper to dump the garbage in some big hole. It's always cheaper to build the houses without the proper with the green building
standards.
It's always cheaper not to treat the air, the water, to treat the hazardous waste. It costs money. So now in this government, everything is measured. Is it cheaper? No, it's more expensive. So we want to build very, very low standards apartments with sewage is costly? No. So we should do everything cheaper. And I see now in the Ministry of Environmental, they're overwhelmed. They cannot make their point, because everything now is looking through the hole in the grush, as you say. So I think this is now the main problem that is really the big block to any good environmental policy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But I have good news on that. I read the book and I was petrified. And you should read it too. It's very compelling.
So you definitely couldn't sleep.
It kept me awake. Look, this is probably the only country in the world whose founding father actually wanted to be planned to be run on green power. And when you look at the Herzl's diary, he wanted it all to be hydro. The height difference from the Med down to the Dead was actually his vision. That's pretty cool. To how visionary is that? I think it was 1902 or something. And then Ben Gurion, the founding prime minister, also understood the power of the sun, the necessity of not only making the desert bloom, but to use it, for future electricity for the country. And his belief, if you can do it for the country, you can do it for the world. Last time I think we sat together, Maya, was I think in a Korean restaurant in Paris at the Paris Climate. We were both on the Israeli delegation, the negotiating team. And exhilarating experience. It was the only kippah among 40,000 delegates. And it was really inspiring. We witnessed, I think, a miracle in our day. It wasn't supposed to happen, and it actually happened. And what was also amazing was how the bar kept raising the bar, and there was a critical mass of people who, if I things that I say sometimes testifying to Knesset, I'm a crazy person. When I talk about like 50% and 100% renewables, it is they're ready to lock me up. But there we were with thousands of people who actually not only believed it and share those beliefs, but had their own roadmaps, were making commitments, and some of these countries were actually doing it. So from my perspective, before I get to Israel, I want to look at the world, and you know, we're toast in so many levels. And every people in every country and every, you know, system and every city and has to play its part. And Israel has never reached its potential or played its part or even seen that it has a responsibility to the world. And the commitments that Peres made in Copenhagen and that Bibi made in Paris are bogus. I mean, they're completely symbolic and completely bogus. The vision we had, this is with Arava Power, when we kind of first made Aliyah and we decided to do this, was that by 2020 we wanted 100% of the daytime energy from Eilat, from the Red Sea to the Dead Sea, to be green, and that was going to be a model for Israel to be 100%, at least during the day until we get the storage, to be green, and then Israel would be the model to the world. And we're at 3%, folks. We're at 3%. It's a disgrace. We're at the bottom of the OECD. There's no hashlachot, there's no uprising, you know, there's none of these. It's really awful. Now, the entrenched interests and the entrenched thinking, you totally nailed it. Solar used to be more expensive, but what has been happening, and if you look at Al Gore's book and from 10 years ago, he predicted that photovoltaics would decrease. And we had to make a choice in Arava whether we're going to bet on the solar thermal, which was actually Israeli IP, or go with the photovoltaics with some, you know, enhancements. And we chose right, thank goodness. Unfortunately, Solel went out of business, also through Siemens. And the future was PV. And in today's world, that we're only 3% is a shanda. And the arguments of the past about the economics are now completely reversed, but the politics and the decisions haven't changed. Why? We in the solar industry are being asked to subsidize natural gas. We're actually cheaper. We're actually total cost, when you compare apples to apples, we're cheaper. And so we're being asked now in the mikrazim, in the bids, to come in anywhere from 26 to 30 agorot per kilowatt hour. It's nothing. There's no air. There's no profits. It's like you can't move. And the natural gas prices are higher than that. And it is absolutely ludicrous. And it's completely ludicrous in a country that's obsessed with security. I see people with some uniforms here, that you want 70% of your power to be dependent on a deep water gas pipeline 200 kilometers on a fault zone and a war zone. What's wrong with this picture? Like, what is wrong with this picture? And so the gravitational forces of decision-making on pricing are still using old assumptions. The notion of how power should be generated and concentrated is all, everything is 20th century think. And there's 24 different government offices that to this day has no gun in it. There is no gun in it trying to corral. We've been in basically a 4-year freeze in this country. The good news that I do want to, on this segment, leave with, yeah. I know going on, I know. Is that today, from the Red Sea to the Dead Sea, we're at 70% solar energy during the day, and we're going to be 200% by 2020. It's totally doable. Chabad Chashmal said everyone said it's impossible. We're going to exceed that goal. So Israel now needs to do it. And the way I spend my days and nights is doing that in Africa.
So you brought exactly to the point I wanted to start with the next question. Maybe we're being a bit too hard on Israel. Let's be honest here. Israel constantly says, speaking of the Paris Agreement, and these are just these considerable weighty arguments. It says we have a significant growth rate as opposed to the OECD. We have we're a small economy. Alana mentioned that. It's not only in terms of the demographics, but also in terms of the GDP, etc., and also we have our security threats that entail on us many expenses, public expenditure. We can't just go spending all our money on creating solar panels. That's what the government says. So I'd like to start with Alona to ask, as a person who actually led the Israeli party in these climate negotiations and other negotiations on sustainability on international agreements. Do you agree with that statement? To what extent is it true? And, I mean, can Israel change its stance? Does Israel have something to contribute to the world on environmental issues, and how should it address the environmental agenda?
First of all, I want to tell you that Israel is a miracle. And every day when I finish my work in the government, I used to speak with the minister, and we used to say for one in a, oh my God, you know something? Israel is a miracle. Because it's such a young country that things are being in creation. I know it sounds very, very strange, and I wasn't realizing that before I worked in the government. Actually, I was very, very negative and very, very... I had a lot of criticism. That's why I worked in the NGOs, of course. But when I saw how things are, the amount of crisis, pressures, interests that are coming from all around, and you have to balance everything and to decide what is now the most important thing. And there is no tradition, there is no establishments that, you know, everything is, you know, few young people in the Ministry of Treasury, few people in the Israel Bank, few people in the, it's just few people. It's not the establishments of USA with, you know, we used to go to the EPA. Oh, my God, the EPA is more than the whole Israeli government. And everyone there is a doctor, and they have huge amounts of researchers, and they know the answer for everything. You come to a government office in Israel, not in the army. The army is the only place in Israel that is functioning well, financed well, And you know something? There are so many, too many people there. I used to think if few of the people in the army, that like 10 people are dealing with every issue, would have come to the government, you know, the government actions would have been in very high level. Because, you know, the government is, you can't imagine how... improvising. It's real.
Definitely.
So, first of all, Israel, that still we managed to not be the financial crisis. We have a stable financial bank, central bank, and none of the banks fell. The economic level here is fine. It's true that there are, I don't believe that I became the senator of Israel, but it's true. The problem is the gaps, but still we are growing economy, we are stable economy, and this is in the mad lunatic neighborhood. So no, I don't think that in 5 years ago we should have, that all of Israel would have been very expensive technology. So we waited. Now the technology is cheap, and now the government will. It's a very, very practical, not ideological. I agree, it was very disappointing that Paris didn't say we will do half of the... No, but it's very pragmatic and very, very logical, because we have a lot of issues and needs that are not less important than renewables. Do we have a part for the world? Yes, I think that you have a part of the world, because one of the most the foundations of Israeli economy is high tech, is new technologies. This is one of the major income for Israel. So, you know, trying to put together high tech and clean tech and all those smart technologies with the environmental needs, this is the future, and this is your part in it. Of course we have a role, like we had a role in water issues. We were leading because this was a need of Israel. So now this is the need of Israel, and I'm sure that you guys can lead us.
Thank you.
There are two issues, really. Israel is innovative and different and has what to offer the world. One Alana just mentioned is the water issue. I think we are a little bit self-congratulatory when we look at our incredible performance with regards to wastewater reuse. Just about everybody I know who works in agriculture, in irrigation as a scientist, says it's starting to happen that the salinity buildup means that wastewater reuse in Israel is going to be a agricultural disaster. And I published an article recently in a very important journal, and it seems like that's a consensus. We will have to use our wastewater, we just have to treat it better. But in terms of drip irrigation, it's unbelievable what we've offered the world, and it's the one hope we have for food security. So that's one area, and the other area is forestry. You know, the JNF experience, you know, people may be a little bit cynical, the blue box, and it's got its corruptions, but I was on the board for 12 years, and I said even Pollard got a pardon, so I finally got off the board. But I really feel like in terms of actually efforts to combat desertification, what we've done in terms of bringing vegetation back to a desertified land and returning forest, it's breathtaking. It's so, so important that people in sub-Saharan Africa come and learn, and I think it's really an important contribution that we can make. So that's my positive statement for the day. I'll go back to disagreeing with Holon in just a second.
You know, it's interesting because we're the Olim, and we're idealistic and we're Zionist, and then you're kind of saying, you know, Israel's a miracle. Well, that's a given. Like for us, it's so a given, which gives us the right out of love to be as harsh as possible to hopefully be as effective as possible. I never planned on, certainly even when we started the solar, to go global, and particularly in the developing world, particularly in Africa. But Shirley's here, so we used to love when you had the groups from the developing world, and the Arava Institute also hosts. And they look at Israel really as a miracle. You know, some of it is, inspired by Christianity, but they expect more from us than we expect from ourselves. And there's a lot of responsibility with that expectation, because actually we can do it. When we were in Paris, I wasn't critical of the Israeli government publicly. Instead, I was talking about from the Red Sea to the Dead Sea, we're going to be fully renewable. And people are like, wow.
And they believed.
And when we go to these African countries, poor countries, without the technical knowledge, really doing it without precedent, or they get a lot of offers from all over the place. But the fact that we're coming from Israel and we're able to say we can get you to 50% renewable, here's how, because we're already doing that in a region of Israel, it opens up the world of possibility. Nat's here from Energia, also Remy, you can talk to them, but Nat was just in Burundi for 3 weeks. We just broke ground in Burundi, one of the second poorest country on the planet, by all accounts a failed state, but they have like Israeli flags everywhere, and not because of us, but people look to this country for hope and redemption, and we can actually deliver. And I'd like to get our own house in order, and in a sense we jumped from the Arava to Africa, leaving kind of Israel a vast wasteland of carbon burning yuckiness. They expect a lot, and at least in what we do, we can deliver.
Thank you, Yossi. So we're just going to have another two questions, basically, and then we're going to open it up for questions. So I know you're waiting to ask some questions. We're going to have a personal question now for each of you, if that's okay. I'm going to start with Alon. I'd like you to talk about two things, if you can. I'd like to ask you if you think in Israel, how you feel that academia and research actually influences policy in any way. Is it something that Israeli government or decision makers take into account? How can it be increased or changed? And also, I'd like you to address another question. Maybe I'll get that in the end.
Well, seeing as I'm in the academic business as of late, I often define myself as an activist trapped in the body of an academic. And the truth of the matter is this is a great country to do that, because with all of the sometimes mean-spirited snipes at elites in Israel, including the academic elites, the truth of the matter is that academics have a huge stature here, and that you bring a bit of, muscle to the table when you go to the Knesset and you say you're a professor, they actually listen to you. And academic reports do matter. I have a good friend in my department, I'm the chair of the Department of Public Policy now, Dan Ben-David, wrote an article in Haaretz on Friday. He's already been in the newspaper, he got two phone calls from Kahlon. I mean, you don't get that kind of traction in other countries. So that kind of academic pedigree, I think, does matter. And I think there is in a Jewish state, it's not surprising that people give respect to learning and to learned people. And I'd like to hope that if academia in Israel will live up to its responsibilities and not be locked into the game of publishing in international journals that nobody reads, but actually try to make something that's accessible to decision makers, we could be even more effective in helping to make the country better.
Thank you.
Alona, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about moving or transferring between inside the environmental world, between different sections or sectors. You've made a very interesting change, that, which you described, between NGOs, government, and now the private sector. I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit about this move. Is it possible how you see different perspectives? You already mentioned some of this, but it's really important to understand, is it possible to make this move? Is it easy? Can you go back? Where do you recommend to start to these people? Because many people here are young professionals interested in this topic.
Well, it is not an unusual route. It's not easy at all. I think it's maybe it shows about the maturity of the environmental issues in Israel that I start. It's like in Germany, a lot of the people that were in the green movement became. I met them when they were activists in the Greens, and then I met them 10 years later. They became mayors and they became officials in the government. So it shows about some kind of maturity, but it's not obvious. And I think that. No, I think that it's I don't recommend this. I think that people should. It's very difficult to go from the NGOs to the government to the business sector. It's you have to each time to prove yourself that you are very dedicated to the cause. Because my friends in the NGOs, they said, "Oh, you left us and you went to the government." Said no, but I always saw the environmental issues to my. It's not against you or with you or now in the business sector. It's about the environment, but it's not easy, and you have to pay a lot of. It's Hollywood.
Tuition.
So decide now what you want to be and follow it.
Thank you, Lona. And finally, Yossi, you mentioned a lot about, you talk a lot about the difficulty of promoting renewable energies in Israel, but you work a lot internationally. Mm-hmm. Would you say that the business environment here is comfortable for clean tech, or would you say it's more difficult, and maybe what should we change? Why isn't it helping?
One is, I just want to do a mirror to Alon. I'm a business person trapped in the body of an activist. And I think it's a really good, those of you who come from activism, I think that gives you an advantage for business, particularly in Israel. You have to kind of like make something from nothing. You have to challenge convention. You have to take risks. You have to figure out what your values are and fight for them. My learning by going to Keturah and being my office was in the Arava Institute was I thought it was first going to be an NGO. We sort of said, okay, if Israel gets 10% renewables or 20% by 2020, we're going to have to raise $20 billion. I was like, that's not going to work. We need a new model. We need a business model for that. And I hadn't thought about business models before. But I'm at the stage in my life where everything that I do and want to do has to be able to scale. I feel like I've been privileged to have so many different kinds of experiences from NGO and others that have done things I'm very proud of, but let's call them cute. At this point, I'm about scale, like real impact in a big way. And for that, now I'm convinced that it's all about business models, because business models can scale in a way that there's not enough charity or enough foreign aid or government subsidy or any of that. And we're out of time, so it has to scale if we're going to make this kind of leap in terms of change on the issues that we care about. The business culture in Israel, when I was focused on Israel, was awful. It was really awful. there are people trying to kill us. Kill us. I for a year or two, I had to walk around with hidden mics, and I had a button-down shirt with a hidden camera in it, and they're like evil people, like gross, yucky, greedy.
Where?
Evil in Israel. In Israel, it was never, by the way, government. I have to say, there was never any hint of shochad, and I know there's lots of things in the news of corruption. It was always so-called competitors who were just disgusting and immoral and just greedy. And it was really bad. I just, you know, I'm sorry to say that as a business culture. However, for Israel, within Israel, but for Israel to the world, my friend Saul Singer, Startup Nation, he basically, his worldview is that Israel is a great platform to solve global problems. And if you can think globally in your startups or in what you're doing, because we're a small market anyway, and so if you're going to scale, and it's going to be a business case, you need to have... And if you do it from Israel, you have advantages. So if you do it from Tel Aviv, you have advantages. We're based in Jerusalem. By the way, internships for anybody who wants to schlep to Jerusalem. Talk to some of our people. Maybe job openings soon, investment opportunities. I have to say, I enjoy working abroad more than I... And there I am dealing with government corruption and other issues. But I feel like... my ability to influence the world is greater to go where it's actually needed. And here, they're not rolling out the red carpet for us, folks. Here, you have to fight for every little amendment of every piece of regulation.
Okay, so not so optimistic. So just last personal question. This is a surprise question for Alon. It wasn't on the agenda. Actually, Alon inspired me with the idea. So I'd just like to ask you, because you were the founder of the political party called the Green Movement, which didn't succeed electorally yet, I would say. Environment is actually associated, Alona wasn't making this up, it's very strongly associated with the left. Now, seeing as the government is not left-wing and hasn't been for a long time, and not sure it will be in the future, how should the environmental... the environmental agenda or practitioners or environmental movement deal with that? And is it a necessary coupling, or can it be decoupled? I'd like a short question to that, answer to that very big question.
Go get
it. So, in the one hand, we look at America with this horrible polarization that we're seeing between Republican right-wingers who are anti-environment and Democrats who are pro. That doesn't exist in Israel. I want to give a compliment. When Alona first took the job, she said, Alona, Gilad Ardan is going to be the best environmental minister in Israeli history. Mark my words. He's Likudnik. And I said, well, what about Yossi Sarid? I think history gives it to Ardan. So it's not right-left in that sense. However, when we look at who's going to vote for a Green Party, it's clear, and we did the polling, center-left might vote for a Green Party. People on the right aren't going to do that. And that was something which, in our first election, people weren't willing to accept. So we were very, very fuzzy on issues of the territories, and we're for a two-state solution, but we basically want to be everybody in the same tent and talk about the environment, and it didn't work. And what happened when that happened, we lost 50,000 votes for the same center-left coalition that people actually believed in. And so when you came back 2 years later and talked to people, vote for us, they said, well, you know, my vote wasn't counted because you got less than 2%. And those are votes essentially that were given to Bibi Netanyahu on the right wing. And so when I was chair of the party, I made the decision when I did the poll and we had 1.1% support in the public, I said, I'm not going to do that again. And I'm going to weigh in with a party which is center-left. Luckily, Tzipi Livni wasn't far left, so it made it easier for us a little bit. Half the party quit, but I said it would have been immoral because I felt a responsibility in a country where coalitions are made or broken on one or two seats for us to give that many votes to the right wing. So for me... I'm not saying you can't vote for Green Party if you hold views that are right, but I'm saying that in empirical terms, it's just not there. So that's been my own sort of evolution on the issue. At first, I didn't want to embrace it, but now I think center-left are the environmental voters. And it's true in the cities as well.
Alana, did you want to add something?
I think that the only political influence of green issues in the municipal level, I think that the leaders of environment in Israel now is the mayors, And this is not by a coincidence that the Forum of the 15 is leading all the issues, because you have to see a long term, and mayors in Israel are for many years. They're not like revolving doors every 1.5 year. Ministers are changing, and everyone is changing in the government, and it's terrible. The mayors are for many years, and they are close to the citizens, and they are. I think that now in Israel, the main power for environmental issues is the mayors. I don't see the green issue as a political power in the national elections. There's no chance. You were completely right. I think it's a political suicide now to try to promote in the national level. And this is also the people are troubled in the national levels in other issues. It's maybe sad, but this is the reality in Israel.
Actually, I don't agree with you guys. I can talk about this for a long time. just for an anecdote, many environmental issues aren't actually framed as environmental issues, but they do have right and left impacts. For example, house ownership, do we promote cars or do we promote public transportation? I think these questions are not entirely, disconnected with, at least on the economic, social economic opinions.
Israeli voter votes about security.
Exactly, but since there is only about security, the environmental issues, and that's the way what I think is also an opportunity, because it enables also right-wing, for example, mayors to promote environmental issues and not be be understood as left-wing. It's also an opportunity, sadly. But last question for you guys, and then we want to open it up, is that the people is connected to the people here. Many people here are young professionals, I'm told, and either integrated or want to integrate inside into an environmental field world, NGOs, businesses, etc. What is your one or two main tips for these guys sitting here to enter into this world? So we'll start with Yossi now.
Get your hands dirty. Jump in, even if you have no idea what you're doing. Find a place to learn through hard knocks. You always need to be raising money more than you think you need along the way. Don't do it alone. Find people with completely different worldviews, with different skill sets. Tackle something, whether it's, again, in the nonprofit or the for-profit. Take risks at this stage in your life. It'll be a lot harder for you to take those risks. When we got to Keturah, it was as if I was 21 years old, or like when I was on your course, because at that point our family burn was so low because we were kibbutznikim essentially. So we were it was a gift of being able to take risks at that stage in our lives. And so just find something that you're passionate about and know what your values are. You know, your value. This is from National Convention 1981. the girls' G4 bunk. That values are what you live by. Vision is what you live towards. And leadership is the act of living your values towards your vision. And almost nobody does it. So if you do it, it's gonna make a world of a difference. But just totally dream big. Break down the barriers. Be as learning agile as you can. Don't lose any of your idealism, and find other great people.
Thank you, Rossi.
Wow. I don't have anything to...
You have to be there. Yeah.
I'll just say two things. First of all, I'm a big believer in professionalism. I want to recognize one of the organizers here, Teddy Fisher, came to Israel, got himself... We knew that he wanted to do something with sustainability. Now he's planning that light rail, which might make life bearable in the city, okay? Even despite the fact that there's too many people, too many cars. But I think it's an example of a model that you can come. And so first of all, no matter how big you want to dream, you want to be competent and get those skill sets in place. And that doesn't happen by itself. It's hard work and it's learning. But that has always been the sort of the advantage, I think, of Americans who would come here with a certain level of competence. And dreaming big. I did want to give a shout out for the potential to join the Arava Institutes. Before I forget, there's people, stand up for people that recruit, if you want to come for the... So that's one place to get some skill sets and the dreams. The other thing I want to say, what did Nietzsche say? That life is either a grand adventure or nothing. So the fact that you're here, you're part of the adventure. Yeah. But we always were taught that you have to take it to the next level. And when people always say, but, you know, how can we change? I mean, an issue like I'm trying to convince Israelis that they want to slow its demographic growth. I mean, you can see how hard this sale is going to be. So, but I am a believer because I think this country is the most open-minded, intellectually nimble place on the planet Earth, and I'll explain why. Because taboos, which in other countries last forever, get thrown by the way by a population which is indeed pragmatic and open-minded. And my example, my best example is the relationship of Israeli society to the gay community. When I met Aliyah about 30 years ago, I went in the army, if anybody in our platoon had been gay, and I'm sure there were statistically, they would never have dreamed of coming out in the closet. They would have gotten the shit kicked out of them. They would have been isolated. It would have been miserable. And then in the last 10 years, we watched a miraculous transformation. And it wasn't pink wash, it was real. And I'm sitting at the demonstration a year ago with the President Rivlin there after that horrible march and the young girl who was killed. And there's President Rivlin turning to the LGBT community and saying, you are part of us. We embrace you. You're part of the Zionist consensus. And I said, my God, what a sea change in the way this country looks. So some very idealistic people who were in the gay community said, no, we can change the country. And they did it. And you can do it too.
All right.
Wow, thank you, Alan, for those very inspiring words. We'd like to open it up to some questions. If anyone has a question, please raise your hand. So here we go. Go for it.
If you can just say who you are, where you're from, and just so we can get to kind of know you, who you are.
Hi, I'm Natasha. I'm the one of the alumni of the Arab Institute, and I have a startup like almost all the Israelis, cycling. And my question is for Alona. Alona Shita. You talked about how the Mechaah Chevratit overthrew the environmental policies, and my question is, why isn't there any pricing for pollution? I mean, you said that it's pricier to treat air and air pollution, and it's pricier to build green, but why isn't there any pricing for pollution? Because in the long run, it's going to cost a lot of money to treat people with cancer instead of building cleaner.
Yeah, that's exactly the point, that if you want to externalize the external costs. It makes things more expensive. Because what you're saying is exactly why things are more expensive when you think, not only about the cost, the immediate cost, but the cost of pollution and all the externalities. So now we are in an era that people don't want to put in the account all the externalities because they want things to be cheap. And this is exactly the problem. I think it will change, but when you have a minister of treasury that was elected on the issue that he will make things cheaper for the Israeli public, this is the only prisma, the only perspective that he has is it cheaper or is it more expensive? And if it's cheaper, I want it.
In the short run.
Is it more expensive in the long run?
Yeah, but that's in the long run. And his politicians are thinking maybe about a year, maybe, in the government. I'm not sure that even a year. But they think about now and what will make them be elected again. But this is, you know, to put things into extreme. But as a whole, in Israel, the issue of putting in the externalities is being more and more... you see now all the taxes about on cars and the fact that they are lowering taxes on cleaner car, and it's, you know, I'm putting it to exaggeration, but of course that they are taking into account. But I think that in the last election, this is a major issue, the thing of making things cheap. But I want to say something optimistic. I am now. A consultant to the mayor of Netivot, you know Netivot? To Green City. And you know, thinking that Netivot is really thinking seriously about becoming a green city, a city that was really in the middle of nowhere, with a very, very low socioeconomic level. And now, because we have such a huge demographic growth, and now they become suddenly a big city, a big, you know, not a few thousand people, but there are now more than 30,000 people. And now the growth is expected to be more. And now they, you know, they're getting the money. And now they built in a very beautiful neighborhoods. And now they want all the public facilities to have PV. You know, maybe you will come and. And now they want to upgrade their facility to treat the sewage. And now they have suddenly an industry zone, and they want to, and you know, and to say Netivot, oh my God, is really going to spend money on being green city. I think it's very, very optimistic. So I think Israel is a great place. Sorry? A great place.
I'd just like to add two things. I just agree very much with Alona about local authorities. I think, as you mentioned before, also the scope that they have in terms of your question, looking forward, it means that you can plan for more than 1 year in advance, and you can take his externalities and say, okay, I'm going to be a mayor maybe in 7 years, and in 7 years I will pay less because I put the PV on my roof. We're promoting now some kind of policy on this issue in our cities. That's how long mayors can see. And it's very true that the ministers, if it used to be 3 or 4 years, now they're looking at a year. Yeah. And the second thing I'd like to say is that we have to listen closely to what many of the people in the social uprising said. Many people were talking about these ideas, but also many people were saying, not I want to have a good life, but I want to have to be able to buy an apartment and buy a car and park it under my house, but also not have any traffic. These things don't go together. And I think we've got a big awareness gap here in terms of the population, which is the challenge of each and every one of us and the NGOs. We can't have it all. We can't have 3.5 children and to have a good apartment with 2 cars and a dog and a lawn, of course, and to have no traffic and be just living inside Tel Aviv. It just doesn't work together. And that's a big awareness gap that I think is the main issue in what you mentioned. Next question, there was someone in the back.
No
one in the back anymore? Oh, so someone at the middle. Oh.
Nathaniel, could you just speak up a little bit?
Oh, if you could just stand up, please.
So, in English, there's a saying / a joke, which is that people will always do the right thing, but only after they've exhausted every other possibility. So, that being said, my question is specifically about electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
I think you may have missed the boat originally on converting Israel into a leader in solar technology, but the writing on the wall seems to be pretty clear that electric cars are going to be the future, and this is something that Israel, because of its geography, could be a leader on in the future. So what are your thoughts about electric cars and electric film stations in the future?
Yossi wants to answer.
All right, well, this is actually the most painful subject in my life, having been the last guy to have owned Better Place, with the amuta of the drivers trying to save it. We were responsible for 10,000 battery swaps and 2 million kilometers, all green, although off a dirty grid. I used to fight all the time with Shai Agassi, about it's great that you're going to do this, but you're just going to transfer the pollution from over here to over there, especially because it's then all coal. You can't do that. If you're going to do it, you have to charge it. You know, let us charge it with the sun. And we had a historic opportunity as a people. Like 2/3 of our greenhouse gas emissions are power plants. I was going to knock those out, and 1/3 was transportation. He was supposed to knock that out, and we should have been in sync. It fell apart for lots of reasons. And it's a big chaval. It's really the biggest flame out in green tech history on the face of the planet, and which is why I was trying to help. But I'm still in court if everybody wants to donate to a legal defense fund. Where it is really a shanda. Now, if it had been managed well, it was not managed well, and also the government was against. But if it would have been managed well, we'd all be saying what a visionary. If they were able to squirrel away $200 out of the $800 million raised and universalize the plagues, because they were essentially trying to build a monopoly, and the government didn't like that. Every car manufacturer in the world today is coming out with an electric car. In other words, we had it. We had it. We had more charge stations per capita than any other place on the planet. We had it. It was within our sights, and we blew it. And because we blew it, it's going to take us even longer than probably anybody else to be able to do it because of the bad taste left in the mouths of the policymakers. And it kind of, and I was in touch with Elon Musk. He didn't want to do the Tesla in Israel because it was just too small of a market. He was focusing on growth. And, you know, what are you going to do? But at this point, almost all the electric cars coming out have enough range that you can do whatever you need to do in this country. You know, and if you're worried about getting to Kibbutz Keturah and back, then you get a Volt with as a small backup diesel engine. Now, what Alona was said is true, and people just don't realize this. The import, the purchase tax on a conventional car today is 83%, 86%, but on the electric vehicles, we've managed to keep it at 8% or 10%. And so that meant that every Israeli could have bought a Tesla at the same price as a conventional car, just because of the way the taxes work, or certainly the new ones and the other ones. And the people need to demand it. You, as consumers, need to demand it. You have to. It is a moral crime for anybody to buy a combustion engine car anymore in the world and especially in a small country like this. So it is totally the future, but now we have to overcome the bad taste from Better Place.
I thought Tel Aviv was chosen.
So Tel Aviv has there's a car sharing small electric program. God bless them. There's going to be lots of those kinds of experiments, but we could have done it from the get-go, all the way through. Now, there are new regulations about home solar now, in terms of there's no this, no that. Kedma Solar's here, there's probably some other groups. And we're going to be house number one on solarizing on their program. But once you can do solar on your homes, it means you can solar charge your cars too, if you have the right roof space or mere pet. And that's going to change things.
I
totally disagree with you.
That's why you're on the same panel.
Okay.
First of all, I think that Shai Agassi is genius. He was ahead of his time. It's ludicrous to think that anyone in Israel would have changed the battery and stop and all that. When it became, you know, the reality, it was so... So not practical. So it was obvious to anyone that it will not happen. Sorry. What was genius about it, and I think that we didn't blew it, but we are continuing, that the whole issue of the smart, the whole issue of the electric car wasn't about this car that wasn't supposed to be produced in Israel, and Israel doesn't have a production places or industry where... Was the smart was the mind of the whole operation, that it was a tuchna with the I saw when Shai Agassi showed us the whole issue of managing the traffic, the whole issue of smart transportation. This was the issue, and now we have Waze and we have Mobileye and we have a lot of technologies, and this is what Israel has to do. Not to produce cars. We don't have a car industry or a battery industry, and we will not have it because we are not a producers. We have to produce the smart technology, not the car and the battery and the things that we cannot compete with China or Japan or you cannot compete. Shai Agassi, with all due respect, could not compete with not with Tesla and not with Toyota and not in the production of the car.
it could compete with the mind and technology, and this is what we have to.
We can't elaborate some more on that.
No. Right, anybody wants the real truth afterwards? No, but she's right. We should be manufacturing.
Just to inform you, today there was something in the news about they were anticipating the fail of the Tel Aviv project. I don't necessarily fail, but they said it isn't economically viable and was too small economy. Go and read it. It's interesting to see. Okay, last question or last two questions. So we have someone from here and then this guy and that's it. Okay, so it's open to questions. So you guys.
All right.
We can hear you and your name, please.
I'm El Azhar. I just finished a degree in environmental science at Aqua College. I connected with what Yossi was saying, that the more efficient way of advancing education was through the business model. But I came to Israel to help Israel. And you're saying that you have experience here, that it's not so practical. Saying more, think globally, and act globally.
Could you repeat the question?
It had to do. I think I came down too hard on the Israeli market, and he was saying, but I came to Israel to like learn environmental science and make good change. Let me tell you the advantage of it being so awful, and that is for 5 years I cursed the Israeli government and bureaucracy and the politics until I built the first, me and my partners, Keturah, the first solar field in the Middle East. And then people came from Africa and said, hey, Startup Nation, can you help us? And I was like, what do I know about Africa? And I was like, oh my God, we have the best toolkit in the world to deal with any adversity. There's no Minhal Karkei Yisrael. There's no Israel Land Authority. Bring it on. I'm there. And so it was a really good training ground to be able to export. I am not giving up the fight. You'll see me in the Knesset. And this is just as a volunteer. Beating up the Israeli government, lobbying the Israeli government.
We're just talking about the
right, exactly. So I'm totally not giving up on Israel. The pace of change was a little slower than some of the international things. So, first of all, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you studied what you studied. And jump in, find what you're passionate about, and do it.
Alan.
I just want to change the context for a second and be a little bit of we have to disagree a little bit, but disagree with Yossi Yosef about the Israeli business climate. And so in another hat, actually my wife and her brother started a small coffee shop in Hashmonaim called Cafe Joe, okay? 220 branches today. We haven't seen the dividends yet, but eventually I'll be able to send my kids to college. And the point is that, again, it's this notion that Israel's not ossified, it's not locked in. And here's somebody who came in, and at the time he could hardly speak Hebrew, but my brother-in-law knew how to roast coffee. And he had a big idea, and the next thing you know, there's 220 of them out there. So even though, yes, Israel's, it's a tough society, a little bit, but you develop the sharp elbows you need, and you can do amazing things here, even in the business world.
Okay. Thank you. So, this gentleman, you can just keep it right before you.
Hi, my name is Amri. My question is regarding transportation in Israel. Elaborating on the issues between the government and financing and the economics of it. Globally, you see that the price of oil has been cut in half in the past 2 years. And in Israel, not only are cars taxed, but gas is taxed also close to 70%. And still you see people are buying more cars, second cars. And a lot of it has to do with public transportation. It's not viable here. Even to get from Ramat Gan to Tel Aviv can take you during rush hour close to an hour, which is unreasonable. My question is, what else needs to be done? Or you're already getting taxed 100%, 70%, and you see it's not having the impact it's supposed to, and it's a big source of income for the government budget. What's missing here? It seems like there are too many forces that are more powerful than the environmental incentives.
It was just advertised that in Israel, one car is sold every 110 seconds. 45,000 new cars were sold only in January 2017, of course, a record number. And I think it's 250,000 in 2016?
No, 300,000.
300,000, over a quarter of a million. So
when I moved here in 1980, there were 1 million cars in Israel. We do that in 3 years. It's amazing.
Okay. But now, if you see now that we have this huge demographic growth, and if you can, if you see that all Tel Aviv is now being ducked to build the subway and a train from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, and you see a lot of investments in the public transportation, which were, you know, for 20 years they want to build the line, but it's not economically viable, and it became now because we are too many people. But the truth is that for many years the government of Israel was pushing the private cars and roads, and they didn't understand what is going on. And I think it's now being changed, not enough, but there is more understanding about the issue. And it's true, it's a lot of interest, economical interest, a lot of the business interest is pushing on the government to bring in more and more cars. The cars importers are very strong.
Yeah, it's awful.
But and the main problem is that the government is earning a lot of money, huge amount of money, from taxing the oil and taxing the cars. So what's I think I'm optimistic. I think that in the upcoming decade there will be more and more investment in public transportation.
I just have to give a little bit of rebuttal. The Ministry of Transportation tells us that over the next 7 years, the average Israeli will spend 50 more minutes a day on average in their car with the Jerusalem train, with the Tel Aviv thing coming on. Guys, we are in a situation where we cannot, put it this way, when you talk about environmental damages and when you talk about social damages and transportation, the function is not linear. You hit a level and you crash. Anybody who saw what happened in Ayalon during Pesach this year, when 50,000 kids came to watch the Festigal, okay, with Luna, whatever they have on there, and you see a picture of the future. And so my practical advice with you would be try to find a place near a train line, because they seem to do a little better than other people. Try to find a place where you can telecommute. Get used to getting up at 5:30 in the morning. It used to be okay to get up at 6, but no longer. And start thinking about you're dealing with symptoms here. And at the end of the day, if we keep growing at 2% every year, there's no way we can make a transportation system that we deserve to have the kind of mobility you're talking about. I'm not optimistic.
So we as a family do not have a car. We won't get a car. We won't get a car until it's all electric. We won't get an electric car until we can charge it with the sun. And it doesn't make any sense.
Do a shout out for our
trip. Oh, right. So there's four of us who need lifts to Jerusalem, by the way. We're also going to be sharing a car, taking public transport. If anybody has a car,
Modi'in
and Edward Hallel and I to Jerusalem. Hallel just downloaded yesterday for me the Move It app, where you can do car ride sharing for next to nothing. And I thought that was awesome. I hope employers start giving electric bikes to all their people, with helmets, of course, with charging stations, and that would be helpful.
I just really have to add, because in the local authorities we deal a lot with these issues. First of all, an issue which isn't addressed is the issue of leasing and the very comfortable conditions for leasing. Apparently people want the car to come with the job, and it's really, in Israel, considered just part of your job, part of the basic conditions. Second issue is the issue that the statute actually is against changing, is the, I think it's called the car benefits. I don't own a car. I'm the only person among my friends who does not own a car, and I'm younger than Yossi, so probably young Yossi is really the only person among his friends. And when I started working in this position as an environmental officer in this position, we asked to transfer my right to get money for the car with the right to get money for public transportation. They were not willing. Nobody was willing. The statute is not willing. Any government ministry is not willing. So even if an employee comes, you as employees are very much aware, you come, you say, I don't want a car. And by the way, my job,
it requires me to travel weekly to all my 15 to 18 municipalities. I go to Jerusalem at least once a week. I was there today in the morning in the panel, etc. I choose to do this, but this is a crazy choice. People think I'm crazy, and probably I am crazy. So definitely, if you don't take out the incentive, not only the prices, because people don't really like to stand in the traffic. In the private vehicle, they don't like it. That's another incentive, I feel, for most people to give up on the car. But this incentive and the money, at the end of the month, if I had a car, I wouldn't move it. I would get more money at my paycheck. And that's the main issue, I feel. So, next question.
We're going to take one.
Okay, whatever you say. So,
you
have to
fight it out.
No, I could see. Nitello. Ari's being really nice and friendly. Because yeah. So, I know Ari, he's not going to get the question. See?
I'll ask afterwards. My name's Tufian from the Blue Bolt Green Department in the Air Force.
Yuffie. Give me all your Air Force bases. They're mad.
Pleasure.
They're mad.
We just opened a
5 megawatt plant. You gotta be kidding. Let me do 100 megawatts at each one of the Air Force bases.
We'll do a revenue split. We'll do more. My question is more, we know a lot of what's going on and been happening in Israel, in the water section, in the solar, it's happening. What do you know are the most exciting things that are happening in the environmental sector, also in Israel and in the world, that we don't know about? Really the most exciting things the average person doesn't know.
Okay, so I think this is a good chance to get everyone an opportunity to answer. And if you want to add anything, we're not going to do another round, so please just make that your final comments.
Storage, energy storage, that's a game changer. Kill all fossil fuel energy once you can store energy, green energy at a reasonable cost. There's some great startups. There's the electric roads, so instead of putting the battery in the car or in the bus, it actually beams the electricity. You go in one lane, and it beams electricity continually. There's some great stuff. Sometimes it's just a little... We have an algorithm now that we're using an hour of a power. We can get another 4% on our solar fields. My fields in Israel, our fields in Israel, are the only fields in the world that are cleaned every evening by robots that are solar powered without water. So we get even more, there's some phenomenal fun technology things. I think part of the fun that we have, and Remy's here, we get to parachute into some of the most exotic, neediest places on the planet. He just came back from Liberia, I think. It's just amazing when from Jerusalem we can bring Ora, to bring the light version of Torah, and give people dignity and jobs and healthcare and education through what we're doing, it is that's so hot. It's really hot, and it's coming from Israel.
Yes, and I don't think that everything is concerning about renewables, because if you look at the world, you have a lot of Israeli development
innovations in food, in agriculture.
Agritech and efficient.
Yeah. I'm going to say something nice about philanthropy, okay? I worry a lot about Africa. There's going to be 3 billion more people in Africa if we don't do something. And, 16% of the world's population, 60% of the wars are there. That's where people are dying of hunger. But I'm hopeful because of the Gates Foundation. And one of the most amazing decisions they made 2 or 3 years ago was that if we really want to deal with Africa's health situation, we have to start with reproductive autonomy and make contraception available to every woman in Africa, because we know when they have the choice, many women will make a responsible choice when they're given the opportunity. And where they have come in, and when they come in strong. It's really, really Melinda Gates' thing. It's an amazing TED Talk if you want to see it. I require all my students to see it. And they're just one example. The Clinton Foundation, with all these persons we're throwing on, also do amazing work. And there's a lot of amazing philanthropy happening in Israel that does really important stuff. So for those of you who want a great job, you should get a job with Foundation, because it's always easier to give away money than to ask for it.
Yeah, okay.
Wow, thank you so much, guys, for these amazing comments. Invite the audience also to, if it's okay with you guys, to also address these people privately, because there's so much more to learn from them that they couldn't share because of the constraints of time. And any one of you guys or your friends are looking to, I don't know, to volunteer or to even a job, but there's so many places, so many NGOs that need help. So
we need it.
Organizations.
This is my Earth is looking for an English speaking intern tomorrow.
Yeah.
Even to save habitat in Africa.
Even
tomorrow.
Even in municipalities where usually you need people, I was able to receive several English-speaking volunteers in some of our municipalities. It's possible. It's not easy, but it's possible. So I invite you guys to talk to me, to talk to people here, alone, whoever you know suggested, and to approach us and to use the community of the environmental field. Thank you, everyone, and see you soon.
Yeah, Yossi, Alona, and Alon. I think this is a great example of, in Israel, you can just basically call up anyone. We have numbers and emails and everything. You just call up and you get everyone to come, whether it's Alon that came from Nahalia, Maya that was earlier in Jerusalem. They just come, and I really want to thank you. It's a long one, okay? We really don't take it for granted. It is your time. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming. I just want to make one more announcement before we show something. There's a discount going on in order to promote and help Tel Aviv. We are all volunteers. We are not funded yet. If a bag, a tote bag, so you can make a client sexy again, that's our slogan, and a cookie baked by Leah Khan for 20
good.
Shekels, please consider, you can be cool at the supermarket.
20 shekels for the bag, not for
20
the
shekels.
With a cookie.
I stole the cookie.
And one thing that Maya was saying now, when we had announcements from Leah Khan and a few other people, one thing we wanted to do is, because we have events once a month or so, we don't want to lose the knowledge that we've actually been shared. So we want to launch today a website that we want to show here that we've been working on. Where is David? David, webmaster. It's basically right behind you. It's a showcase. You can go here. This can be your environmental resource here in English. And yeah, the panelists, please take a look. A little bit of who we are, and most importantly, the events. You can go back and see the events you missed, whether on topics such as food security, ag tech, solid waste soon to come, urban sustainability, smart cities, exactly what you can look in. And then within that, see the speakers that presented, their bios, presentations that they uploaded, so you can actually go back and review. It is a lot of work. It's a lot of time, so we hope you can use it and enjoy it. One thing that's coming again, resources, Amir. Under resources, articles, news, whether things that were published about Israel related to the environment and different topics in English according to different topics. It's a work in progress. You have ideas, feedback, suggestions, please let us know. And hopefully a blog soon. Shosh, that's your next And Shosh is interning with us and helping us out in Tel Aviv. Thank you for your help, Shosh, as well. And the job board, which hopefully we'll also be able to upload. It will be dynamic with internship opportunities, with job postings. Again, we'll need a lot of help from different sectors to kind of populate this, as well as another idea to actually link people with mentors in the field. Shout out to Aviva for that idea. So again, this is a resource built for you. This is a community. We're really trying to be a grassroots initiative. It's not yet out in the market, and this is why we're here. This is what the vacuum, this is what Tel Aviv is trying to fill. And I think that's it. So thank you guys for coming.